little bit of mischief.
That's a snippet from the very successful musical Matilda. And it's quite a strong message, actually, in that song. We'll talk about it a little later because the author of it, the composer of it, Tim Minchin, joins us now. Matilda opened 6 years ago with a trial run. Can you imagine? They thought they needed a trial run. Staged by the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon. It, of course, went on to become a West End and Broadway sensation. It won 7 Olivier Awards, 5 Tonys and 13 Helpman Awards here in Australia. A huge hit here. Last year, the musical, based on the Roald Dahl novel, had its Australian debut in Sydney. It's just finished up a 35-week run in Melbourne, and it kicks off tonight in Brisbane before moving around the rest of the country. For Australian entertainer Tim Minchin, he wrote the music and the lyrics, as I'm sure you know, it has been a triumph, and I think a lot of people think maybe springboarded his career to a new level. We'll see what he thinks about that. Tim's based in LA these days, but he's with me now in the breakfast studio. Tim, welcome back.
Hi,
to breakfast.
Nice.
Do you think this musical has been a springboard for you to sort of a bigger, more sort of global success?
Yeah, well, I think it, weirdly, I come from a theatre background and I wrote a lot of music for theatre when I was young and then kind of found my way into comedy, and Matilda brought me back into theatre but just threw me back into theatre at a much, much sort of higher level. And then yeah, I think musicals are tough to get right, and I obviously only was a tiny part of the puzzle with Matilda. It's a whole lot of incredible creatives making it, but if it does hit, because musicals sort of don't hit about 95% of the time, people come and grab you pretty hard and
exactly.
Say, come and help us, come and help us. And I'm like, I don't know.
I've been to a lot of musicals that didn't hit, and
yeah.
Matilda was an absolute sensation, I have to say. It was brilliant. And there was that song we played a little bit of mm-hmm. there. The lyrics of that song, the reason I'm familiar with them is because I'm very close with a couple of docs workers, and they took that song and basically saw it as an anthem for the kids that they're working with, that they're looking after, a song
right.
of kind of resilience, a song of fight, a song of sort of self-advocacy.
Mm.
And I wonder if how you feel as a songwriter of a musical, hearing that kind of resonance of your lyrics.
It's incredible, actually. And when you try and write for something like Matilda, obviously you are writing for children, but you hope dearly that the lyrics can be more vertically relevant than that adults can take away from it something. And I don't suppose I ever dreamed that they would, these songs would be sung by, you know, I get sent videos because some Scottish film, schools event with 3,000 kids singing When I Grow Up. And it's beyond, it's so moving, actually. And the songs are songs about rebellion and standing up for yourself. And so I guess they do have messages beyond the story itself.
Yeah, and maybe that was an inadvertent kind of life of the song beyond the stage, beyond the musical. What about your very advertent, I don't think that's a word, entering the political sphere with Come Home, Cardinal Pell, the single released this year.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of took off too. I think it's your only single to get in the charts, is it?
It's the only single anyone ever played on the radio because I didn't swear in it, believe it or not.
Do you still perform it, and what do you think, how do you feel about the impact of that?
I certainly don't perform it. I've never performed it. I wrote it.
And how's it affected your career, I wonder?
I'll try and give the short answer. I can't believe it's only this year. I wrote it, recorded it and released it within days. I never played it again. I'm not interested in sort of celebrating a slap down like that. I'm not a bully. I released it in a particular time for a particular reason to fundraise and for the survivors. But the impact, I flew into Australia the morning before yesterday, and I brought my daughter with me this time for this press tour, and I've been stopped 5 times in the 48 hours since I've been here by people on the street, and all of them are talking about that song still, and 3 of them were crying. And they stop me and say, you know, I was going through this when that song came out, and it made me feel like, I mean, I've never ever done anything like it, even Matilda, that has such a personal effect on people.
It's a powerful demonstration of the impact that humour can have in a political sphere. And to broaden this away from you, but to the United States, where you live now,
mm-hmm.
you live in LA,
mm-hmm.
I understand, they've just been through the US elections and the election of Donald Trump. I'll ask you what you think about that in a moment, but also more particularly what you think about the impact of something like Saturday Night Live, okay, which campaigned really, I suppose it's campaigning, certainly the Alec Baldwin's parodies of Donald Trump, which Donald Trump didn't like at all, and he's hit back again just for Saturday Night's version of it because they ran the skit about Mike Pence being booed at the musical Hamilton. Let's just hear a bit of this.
Hello, sir. I heard you went to see Hamilton. How was that?
It was good. I got a free lecture.
Heard they booed you.
Absolutely.
I love you, Mike. You're the reason I'm never going to get impeached.
Sir, being president is not going to be easy, but we'll get through it if we work hard together.
Thank you, Mike. Oh, and Mike, you're going to do everything, right?
Yes, sir.
And Donald Trump didn't like that, and he tweeted his disgust about the treatment of Mike Pence too at the theatre and on Saturday Night Live. But some actually believe that Saturday Night Live might have helped boost Donald Trump's appeal because it mainstreamed it in that sense and made him part of the kind of joke. What do you think?
I don't know how helpful what we as satirists and artists and stuff are feeling after the election of this imbecile is a sense of that all this protest, all this humour, all this treating it like the joke that it was, we realise it didn't work. There's such a divide that I think satire, pointing out that someone is a fool, or the manner in which they're a fool, the things they say that are foolish, we thought, you know, the hypothesis is that works because people go, oh, you know, that's a good point. He is a bit foolish in that regard, and we're laughing and we're feeling the foolishness, and I'm dumbstruck by the whole thing and incredibly sad. It's really, really, really depressing. You know, he's talking about a creationist for the head of education, and I mean, I can't believe it. And suddenly all my comedian friends in America are just sort of, they're just dried up. They're just
struck dumb.
Suddenly realize it's not funny. We always knew it wasn't funny, but we thought the comedians I know, I guess, thought that point. That's always been ever since the courts, ever since jesters, that we've meant to point out the foolishness of people's ways, or in the case with me and Pell, in my opinion, a certain moral hypocrisy, but in a way that makes people laugh. And the hypothesis is that has a social effect.
So to amplify the foolishness, not to attract people to it.
That's right. But in a post-truth internet world, you know, we realise that it just doesn't work anymore because everyone's getting peppered with information from every side and no one knows what's real anymore.
Well, there's one point, no one knows what's real anymore, and we've got that whole thing about Facebook and non-factual news and all of that, but also people can, with all these choices, people can narrowcast to where they want, so they only hear one slice of it.
That's the echo chamber. I mean, the internet, Google itself is a confirmation bias tool. It feeds you what you already think.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Tim Minchin is our guest. Tim, before you go, I'd like just to talk to you a little bit briefly about your new musical, Groundhog Day, because Groundhog Day is a movie that everybody loves. How challenging was the thought of trying to turn that into a hit musical?
Well, I think...
Even after the success of Matilda, were you awestruck by that?
I mean, both the success of Matilda and the fame of the movie could get you pretty stressed out because you don't want to let yourself down and you don't want to let the text down. But look, it's such a fantastic concept, Groundhog Day, as an allegory for our own lives being this sort of churning, sometimes repetitive thing. I mean, you do radio, you must sometimes feel like you're
never,
having your own
never
Groundhog
feels like
days.
Groundhog Day here at the RM Breakfast
always
Tim,
different.
What are you suggesting?
It's always different. They sometimes change the light globes. no, but it's such a powerful idea that someone in a day can experience all the lessons that we have to learn over our lives about how to be happy and how to be kind and how to be good. It all resonates with these things we're talking about. It all, the idea of how to be kind, even in the face of all the troubles. I was incredibly inspired by it, and it's always hard. It seems to have gone all right, the musical, but the pressure of the movie and stuff, I've got to admit, it sort of goes way down the list. in compared to the challenge of actually getting the thing up.
I hope we get it here. Do you think we'll get it here?
Yeah, you'll get it here.
All right. Well, thank you for Matilda and good luck with Groundhog Day.
Thank
and
you so much.
When it does come here, maybe you'll join us with a keyboard and we'll have a little number.
Oh, yeah, we'll sing along.
Terrific. Tim, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Tim Minchin, comedian, actor, composer, songwriter, pianist, director. It goes on and on. You're listening to RM Breakfast. It's 14 minutes to 9.